Welcome to another episode of the Deborah Health Report, where we dive into current health and medical topics to keep the Delaware Valley informed and updated. Last month, we focused on heart disease prevention, tips about resources to understand cardiovascular events, and ways to manage your risk factors. This month, we discuss arrhythmia diagnosis, treatment, and management, and even address some new social media claims about self-help to reset your heart rhythm. Here's Rasa Kay.
Hi, I'm Rasa Kay. We ran down the most common heart rhythm disorder last fall when we focused on the arrhythmia that affects the upper chamber of the heart, known as atrial fibrillation. AFib carries a high risk for stroke. But it's not the only one to worry about, according to Deborah cardiac electrophysiologist Dr. Rafael Corbizero, who returns to the Deborah Health Report this month to flesh out other abnormal heart rhythms, from the often minor skipped beats to the seriously scary ventricular fibrillation, or VFib. If there's a timing problem with your ticker, Dr. Corbizero is here to explain how it may have gotten off the beat and the ways to keep it safe and steady.
Arrhythmias can occur anywhere in the heart, and where they occur is very important because they carry different prognostic factors. So the top part of the heart has arrhythmias, most common of which is atrial fibrillation. The bottom part has some arrhythmias. The most significant one is ventricular fibrillation, which is the cause of sudden cardiac death, which is the number one cause of death in this country. It almost outweighs all cancers combined.
The causes of an arrhythmia.
Skip beats have significant triggers like stress. The other causes, the most significant one is patients who have heart disease. Patients have had heart attack, they have scars. The scar that in the bottom part of the heart, in the ventricle, is the area where arrhythmias arise. Those are the most significant ones because those put our patients at risk for sudden death. So those we have to evaluate. So that is triggered by anatomy. There are other anatomical situations in the heart that lead to other arrhythmias that are not as significant.
So the upper ventricle, the AFib issue, what are the causes of that one?
With atrial fibrillation, the most common rhythm problem in the world, first, it can occur without any triggers. Unfortunately, there are areas in the heart that become more active as we get older and we start to see atrial fibrillation. It can happen all by itself. There are some known triggers, specifically pneumonias can cause atrial fibrillation. We've seen an upclick in atrial fibrillation since the COVID epidemic, which is a type of pneumonia. Another common reason that we see is if the patient has sleep apnea, very often undiagnosed or untreated, and that can trigger AFib. More common causes, thyroid issues. Rare things that occur, especially with women, pregnancy, menopause, can be a cause of atrial fibrillation. So those are the things you have to look at, too. So in our world, the atrial fibrillation is sort of there. We know where it comes from. But there are triggers, you know, from the outside. We can't control all the triggers that cause it. So we still treat the AFib.
The arrhythmias that we're discussing today, you can walk through your life without any idea it's going on.
So it depends on the arrhythmia. People can have atrial fibrillation and be relatively asymptomatic and not know about it. That's a question I often ask my patients. So who told you about your AFib? Did you know you had AFib? And they'll say, no, they told me I had AFib. So that can occur. Now, the other arrhythmias, it would depend. Again, I emphasize the most serious arrhythmia is the one that leads to sudden death. And obviously, that can be quite significant. And unfortunately, that could be the first presentation of heart disease, is sudden death. A small percentage of patients who show up with their first heart attack have sudden death, an arrhythmia problem, and that's devastating.
How do people need to stay on top of the possibility of arrhythmia, especially if a relative had it, for example?
Arrhythmias, again, depending upon where we are in the heart. Typically not hereditary in terms of atrial fibrillation or other supraventricular arrhythmias. The bottom part of the heart, again, which we take more seriously, as I said, the most common reason in this country is if you have coronary artery disease, heart attacks, blockages. That's the majority. However, there are rare inherited disorders that can lead to sudden cardiac death. Those are genetic, and there are issues with the heart. There are a number of syndromes, the most common of which is hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which some people call it sort of athlete's heart. If you remember Reggie Lewis of the Boston Celtics, that was an inherited condition of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. He should have gotten a defibrillator and didn't, and unfortunately had drastic results.
When an athlete takes a hit to the chest, how does that...
That's an extremely rare syndrome, which happened to the Buffalo Bill player. The timing of that is just unfortunate, but if you have a traumatic event to the chest, and if it hits the heart at the right timing cycle, you can actually initiate a very lethal rhythm problem.
I mean, that's a split second.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's extremely rare. You know, the other conditions, like I said, the hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, there's a condition called long QT syndrome, there's Brugada's, there's a arrhythmic dysplasia. These are all inherited conditions, genetic conditions, that has to be researched and decided upon whether or not we have to protect those patients.
So basically, if you know you have one of them in your family, in a first-degree relative.
Correct. Yes, you would have to be screened. So not, again, with genetics, you know, everybody can be looked at, but not everybody will express the disease. But you still have to be looked at and decide whether or not we have to protect you.
What kinds of arrhythmias would actually cause pain? When you feel one, what is it like?
When you have the arrhythmia and you have rapid heartbeats, depending upon other situations, it may bring about symptoms. Just that alone can cause you to have chest discomfort, shortness of breath, even pass out. But again, it is subjective. Usually it's the rapid heartbeat that causes the issues.
Skipping a beat, the premature beat, is that top or bottom issue, and is that significant?
So it depends on the patient. So everybody has skipped beats, whether it's the top or the bottom part of the heart. No one is regular 24/7. What they mean prognostically depends on the patient. So for instance, a young, healthy patient with a normal heart has some skipped beats, premature ventricular contractions that they feel. Significance, very little. Bothersome, we may try to help them out. If it's a different patient that has had open heart surgery, has had heart attacks, they're a scar, those skip beats may carry a very different significance. They might be at risk for worse problems, and we have to evaluate that.
Is it something you notice?
So again, it's very subjective. Like I said, everyone has skip beats, not everybody feels them. So I've had patients who come into the office and they're feeling fine, and their heart rate is abnormal. It's 200 beats a minute. They're out of rhythm, and they feel okay. I have other patients who like to call me with every single skip beat that they feel.
Let's talk about triggers then. For even a skip beat, is there a trigger for that? Or is it, you know, that whole of some enchanted evening, and I see somebody, my heart skips a beat, or stress, or whatever. What triggers a skip beat? Anything?
The most common cause is any type of instance that will increase adrenaline levels, per se. So whether it's emotional, physical, food, or otherwise. But again, I think that what we're learning is everything is very specific. It's hard to put broad strokes. So coffee, some people can have, you know, 3 cups of quote unquote, you know, death wish and they're fine. And other people have, you know, 1 cup and they feel palpitations. In the end, I think this is all going to be sort of genetically related. You know, some people can tolerate this, some people can't. And arrhythmias are geographically specific. So it depends on where we are in the heart. In a normal heart, in a young, otherwise healthy patient, there are abnormal arrhythmias that can occur, most common of which is called supraventricular tachycardia. These are abnormal circuits based on the electrical anatomy. They are not life-threatening. They can be life-annoying, and they usually occur in the top or middle part of the heart.
When you say young, define young.
Younger patients, anybody less than 50.
Okay.
Then, unfortunately, as we get older, in the top part of the heart, the most common arrhythmia is atrial fibrillation, which is a disorganized electrical arrhythmia. And that can occur. That's usually not life-threatening, but has consequences, the worst of which is stroke. So that has to be addressed. As we move towards the bottom part of the heart, the ventricle, those arrhythmias can occur. In a normal ventricle, you can have premature ventricular contractions, which is the most common complaint with arrhythmias in the ventricle. These are usually prognostically not significant, but they can be symptomatic, and we can treat that. all the way to patients who have had problems with their ventricle, i.e. heart attacks. If there's a scarred ventricle and they have arrhythmias, that puts them at risk for the worst rhythm problem there is, which is ventricular fibrillation, which leads to sudden cardiac death.
How do you find arrhythmias? Some of them are more symptomatic than others. So explain how we catch them before they become an issue.
So if the patient is having symptoms consistent with arrhythmias, i.e. palpitations, we will monitor the patient. We will start off with some general monitoring where we monitor them for anywhere from 3 to 14 days, and then we examine the monitor to see what it shows. In this day and age, people have become quite savvy, and they have the Apple Watch, they have the Cardia device, they have their Fitbit, so they may pick up things on their own, and they'll say, you know, my Fitbit said my heart rate was going 180, which is, you know, unusual. We have to evaluate that. Unfortunately, a lot of times we find things inadvertently. So the patient is here for other cardiac testing, here for a stress test, and the staff notices that there are rhythm problems. And even though the patient may not be feeling it, we get to see it. And then we have to determine whether or not it's significant and we have to treat it. You know, AFib, you know, like I said, the worst consequence of AFib is stroke. And so there have been studies where we will monitor patients very closely that don't have AFib, but we think they are at risk for AFib. So we have a device called a loop recorder. That is a very small chip that's implanted just under the skin of the chest that monitors the heart rhythm 24/7. And what they found was they were excellent at diagnosing AFib before the patient even knew they had AFib. But that was based on certain risk factors. So really, it's just a matter of monitoring. I think as we go forward, you'll see that the tech companies will get better and better at having patients monitor themselves. The Apple Watch, you know, has an excellent AFib monitor.
And for the ventricular fibrillation, how far in advance, I mean, because the consequences are so dire, is mm-hmm. there some way to pick up on that beforehand?
Yeah, that's a matter of what's called risk stratification. So the people that we think are at risk for that, the most common is patients who have coronary artery disease, they have blockages, and their ventricle has been affected with scar. And so we have criteria that we look at. So depending upon what the amount of scar is in the ventricle, we can determine whether or not we think they're at risk. If we think they're at risk, we give them protection from this rhythm problem with an implantable defibrillator. And if we put that in ahead of time, that's what's called primary prevention. In other words, nothing has happened, but we're worried, so we're going to give you this device ahead of time in case you need it, which is a much better way to take care of our patients than waiting for them to actually have the ventricular fibrillation and hoping that they survive. Because the chance of survival, depending upon where you are, is very low.
This is stunning news for somebody. So what is the experience for the patient to have such an implantable device?
It depends on the patient, right? So the arrhythmia part of it is one small part of taking care of their heart problem. So if they have heart problems, you want to do the best you can to prevent any further heart problems. So if they've had a heart attack, you want to prevent the second one. But in terms of the arrhythmia, if we think they're at risk, we implant the device in case they need it. If they never need it, we're happy with that. But if they need it one time and it saves their lives, we just save their life.
How do you implant it? How does it get there?
So there are two strategies for implanting a defibrillator.
And you'll get to find out all about that when we continue our conversation about arrhythmias with Deborah cardiac electrophysiologist Dr. Rafael Corbizierro. It drops the first Wednesday of the month. I'm Rasa Kay.
You can always listen to all of the informative Deborah Doctor interviews at DeboraHealthReport.com. Schedule an appointment at DemandDeborah.org.